The Common Good on KFSK is brought to you by the Petersburg Community Foundation, an affiliate of the Alaska Community Foundation. The Petersburg Community Foundation is devoted to improving the lives of the young, the elderly, and vulnerable populations, as well as creating recreation, education, and safety programs. The Petersburg Community Foundation, making grants to local nonprofits through a permanent endowment. More information at petersburgcf.org.
Good morning and welcome to The Common Good. This is Hannah Floor, and I am joined here in Studio One at KFSK by Sunny Rice.
Morning, Hannah.
Good morning. And Sunny, you are a member of the Petersburg Marine Mammal Center.
Yes.
All right. And we're here to talk about the science series that the Marine Mammal Center hosts.
Yes.
And we're also joined by KFSK reporter Rachel Cassandra.
Hi there.
Hi. I was talking about this conversation yesterday at work, and Rachel was very excited about all the things that the Marine Mammal Center and Sunny Rice are doing. So
absolutely.
Yeah. So we were talking about this a little bit yesterday. I was trying to figure out the different things that you're involved with Sea Grant, your employer, and the Marine Mammal Center, which is a nonprofit that you work with. Correct me if I did not disentangle this entirely yesterday. So Sea Grant is your employer.
That right. Yes.
That is a nonprofit, but the goal of Sea Grant is to partner with other projects in the area and around the state.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay. And so you do partner with the Marine Mammal Center as well.
Yeah. I was thinking about that as I was walking up. The goal of the Marine Mammal Center is education, outreach, and response to entanglements and strandings.
Okay.
The goal of Alaska Sea Grant is education, outreach, and research. So there's a really natural natural connection there. So yeah, as part of my job with Alaska Sea Grant, I work with the Marine Mammal Center on doing their stuff. So I'm part of the board.
And then the science series that we were going to be talking about today is a series of talks that you set up through the Marine Mammal Center in Petersburg about things that are going on in the area.
Yeah, and I looked, I had fun looking back. I found the first one I found record of was in 2010, which was a talk about the Christmas bird count. It actually started, the science series started with just me and a couple other science-interested folks started it together. And then when I joined the Marine Mammal Center, it seemed like such a logical connection that now the Marine Mammal Center is sort of the board of that helps decide, you know, who might be good speakers, nominate speakers, but I kind of implement it.
Okay.
The one that makes it happen, but with lots of input from the rest of the Marine Mammal Center board.
Okay. And what is the goal of the science series? How did that come to be?
Yeah, it's just to bring science education not hands-on because it's usually talks, but in person, and draw sort of local connections to science that is happening. So we almost always, it's something has local relevance, is a local scientist or researcher, or, you know, has something going on. It has to do with a fishery that we participate in locally, or the glacier that's in nearby, or things that we see here. Every once in a while we bring in like new, couple times we've had new folks move into town and it's like, oh, I just did my master's thesis on lizards on the Galapagos Island. And it's like, okay, well, that sounds kind of cool. So let's have you give a talk too. But usually we try to keep it really locally focused.
Okay. And is it, it's a talk in the evening. People come, slides. Tell us a little bit about how it goes. Are there questions afterwards?
Oh, yeah. It started out being the Thursday science series, but then we realized we couldn't always do it on a Thursday. so it became the Petersburg science series. Yeah, and usually about a one-hour talk at the public library. Somebody that's doing interesting work gives a presentation with lots of questions, and it's pretty casual. There's no test at the end. It's not like a science class. I work to find speakers who are really good at taking what might be their complicated work and making it accessible and understandable to the public. Mm. And then I help them, you know, I just give them a little bit of coaching if they need it about, you know, your audience is not a bunch of other researchers that are here to point out potential problems. Your audience is regular people, maybe science training, maybe not science training.
Oh, interesting. So you prep them for the presentation and remind them that they're talking to the general public and maybe it needs to be talked about in different language.
Yeah. And usually the speakers that we have are experienced with that. But if they aren't, especially if they're younger and they're just finishing their degree, you need to remind them to take 7 steps back and tell us the basic biology before you, you know, get into the complicated part. So, and sometimes there might be, you know, part of the talk that makes sense for somebody that's younger or isn't real involved in science. And then the end of their talk might get into the nitty gritty details. Right. And that's okay too.
Yeah. Rachel, you look like you had something.
Oh, yeah. That's just, it's so much of what I do as a journalist too, is just trying to get people to make their expertise accessible to,
And you get these like gems, these certain people that you know are amazing at doing it. And then like, I will have them talk whenever.
Yeah.
Because I know that they can, you know, I know that they're good at doing that. And it does seem like it's usually, if you've been at it for a long time, you're starting to see the bigger picture.
Mm. So it's being able to step back and see the bigger picture, not just change the way that the verbiage and the words that you use, but be able to help people understand why to care because you can see it from 10,000 feet.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I think the way science is taught is all about, you know, drilling down, finding your one thing, you know, your one item that you want to focus on. And then I guess I'm talking about biology because that's what I tend to intersect with. Mm-hmm. Your one thing that you want to focus on. And even within that, you know, it's not just I'm really interested in amphibians. It's I'm interested in this kind of amphibian and I'm interested in what it does at this stage in its life cycle, you know. And so that can be fascinating. It often is really fascinating. But yeah, to make it pertinent to me, the average person that hopefully sees an amphibian someday squirming along the bank, you know, you got to step way back. Yeah.
Can you, are there any that talks that pop to mind in your head when you're thinking about people who did really well sharing that kind of thing?
Yeah, well, that was, I went back through them, and Seth Perry did one on amphibian, which was just great. And Seth doesn't even come to the topic of what's going on with amphibians in our general vicinity through a traditional education. He's just fascinated by them. And then he got paired up with a researcher and they ended up doing this big project up the Stikine as well. So yeah.
You mean after the talk they went and did a project together?
No, he came and gave a talk as they were doing the project.
Oh,
I don't
gotcha.
Know how the connection was made between this researcher and Seth, but yeah, that was a really cool one.
That's really fun. So he was a layperson who was just like really, really into it. And
Yeah. And then they started doing a whole monitoring project. And it continues, I think. I shouldn't say for sure, but I know Eric Castro with the Forest Service is continuing to do monitoring on those amphibians. And I think there's a connection there.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. It makes me think about how I full disclosure, I'm not a super science person. And when I was in high school, I was always just kind of like, meh. not my favorite thing, but in talking to people who are excited about science, who are good at helping you understand, like I went on a hike with Karen Dillman and she was talking about the ecosystems that mushrooms really thrive in, and being in the woods, talking with her about it, looking for mushrooms and understanding how it all came together made me so interested in a way that it hadn't occurred to me to be previous to that.
Yeah, I was thinking, and if anybody out there ever has a chance to go for a walk with Karen Dillman, do it. Because your world will be so expanded. But I was thinking about like why somebody should care about science talks.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me think, maybe calling it the Petersburg Science Series isn't as inviting as it could be, because it could be off-putting, you know, for some people. I think the way we teach people kids science now has changed. Mm-hmm. But when I did it, it was like memorize the periodic table or the parts of a cell. There wasn't really a connection to the world around me. It was just learn these assignments and check off these boxes. And I was trying to remember when it started to really click for me. And it was in a geology class in college. And it was like all of a sudden I could look at mountains and landforms and not just see them for their beauty, but starting to get an understanding of why they look that way. What happened? What is the, you know, what formed them? So Petersburg Mountain, beautiful mountain, but also like, oh, the glaciers came through and carved that. And then there's erosion and the rock type under that is harder than the surrounding rock type. And it just gives you this whole different additional perspective that makes the world so much more interesting, I think. So you learn about mushrooms, and all of a sudden you're looking for mushrooms, and then you're like, oh, I wonder if that mushroom is decomposing that log. You know, or how is that crazy lichen hanging on that branch, you know, getting water? That kind of stuff.
Yeah. It makes me think about how when my daughter and I were living out at Frederick Point looking at the Coast Range and then coming in and seeing Petersburg Mountain, and she was like, Mom, why do those mountains look so different? And I was like, I don't know.
Gosh, so perceptive.
But it made me wonder, and those are the kinds of things that now it never occurred to me to care about, but then seeing her curiosity about them made me wonder as well.
Yeah.
Still don't know why, but.
They're just higher. The glaciers the glaciers are what smoothed out Petersburg Mountain, and the Coast Range is so much higher. The glaciers weren't that high up, so they didn't smooth them out. They remained their kind of pointy selves. Yeah.
I can't wait to share that with her.
Yeah.
So, can you tell us, some of the talks that, have been particularly exciting to you?
Yeah, the first one that popped to my mind was Jim Baichtal. He came in, I wrote some of the dates down, 2012. So he is one of those great, he's a geologist. I feel like geology is really accessible because we all like mountains, and it can give explanations for why the land that we live on looks the way that it does. But so he's just done amazing work over the years, but this talk was because a local person, Gene Primacki, had been out with the U.S. Forest Service and found a dinosaur, a marine reptile dinosaur, you know, embedded in the rocks. It was called a thalattosaur. And so there was a picture of that, and he came and told everybody the story of the thalattosaur and the finding of the thalattosaur and what it meant and what its life was like and what that tells us about, you know, plate tectonics, how things are moving around. Because I'm pretty sure it was a warm water, you know, when it died and was in the mud and became a fossil, it was in a warmer water environment.
Right.
And then that rock formation, you know, moved through plate tectonics and came here. So
there was a dinosaur. When did this happen? I hadn't heard about this.
It was 2012 that he came and gave the talk. So I don't know if it was 2010, 2011.
Yeah.
The talk was in 2012. Lots of folks. We were at the Holy Cross House because there were so many people.
Yeah.
So lots of interest in that one. It was fun. Let's see, what else? There was a guy named David Scott Cowper who came through in 2013. So I try, whenever there's a researcher, I try to grab him who's coming through or somebody doing stuff like that. So this guy wasn't a scientist, but he was one of the first people transiting the Northwest Passage. He had this crazy boat, this crazy bright yellow boat down in the harbor. And he had come across through the Northwest Passage and ended up here. Now the cruise ships, now they have cruise ships doing that. So
right.
Lots of but change was, in a pretty short amount of time. But
that was one of the first.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. What is coming up? Because I know that we had scheduled this for a couple weeks from now, right before your second talk of the winter.
Yeah. We stopped the science series during COVID because I didn't want to just do Zoom talks for folks. So now that we can do them in person again, we're doing them. Heath Whitaker will be talking on January 26th about the watershed restoration work that the Forest Service is doing. They have a project that they're at least mostly done with, I think, at East Omer Creek. And then they're starting a new one out on QU Island.
Okay.
So he's going to talk about that. A guy on our Petersburg Marine Mammal Center board named Toby Bakus is actually a wildland firefighter. And so he spends some of his summers down fighting fires, and he's going to talk to us about that. That's going to be what we try to have one a month. We're going to try to have one a month in the winter. And I'm excited for Emil Tucker talking about, he's been looking at historical photographs of the glaciers in our area and then current photographs and seeing how the glaciers in our region have been changing. And then also what that, you know, what comes up, you know, as that glacier starts to recede, what are the changes that happen downstream from the glacier? There's, you know, changes to salmon, changes to the plants that are coming up and all that kind of stuff.
So. Interesting.
Yeah.
And so we've been talking about specifically about these classes, but I'm also curious what you and the Petersburg Marine Mammal Center has been working on recently. Because you said that the goal is... The mission is education and then entanglement.
And outreach and entanglement, yeah.
Yeah.
So So the marine mammals, under those three, the outreach is kind of what the science series is, you know, helping scientists that are doing their own work, you know, access the public and the public access those scientists. That's kind of the idea between outreach. Education is summer science camp, mostly, that we do every summer with the 5th, 6th, 7th graders. And then entanglement in marine mammal response is, if a dead marine mammal washes up on the beach, there are researchers that are interested in trying to understand why and what's going on. And then disentanglement is if an animal is entangled with, mooring buoy or whatever, that we can try to disentangle it. And there's the group of us, of volunteers in town, that are trained to help try to disentangle stuff. Yeah.
How often does that happen?
I mean, that you're dealing with it. Sure. I think I've gone on 5 where we were doing something in some way. There will be reports of entangled whales, and we may go see if we can find it. Sometimes we don't find it. There may be reports of a beached whale, and we may go out and just take a look at it, and they decide whether. But I think there's been 5, and then it's been about, 2011 maybe, where I started. So, and then, throughout Southeast Alaska, there's a group in Juneau, there's a group in Tenneke, there's a group at Baranof Warm Springs. So you kind of get called for the ones that are in your neck of the woods, Ketchikan, guy down to Ketchikan. So
when you get that call, do members of the board or volunteers, what happens? I'm imagining a kind of like a fire response. How do you deploy and go out and try and find this mammal?
Yeah, it's... we get as many vessels as we can. We have some volunteers that have their own boats. We have, it's all volunteers on their own boats. We have a little boat that the Marine Mammal Center owns, but it's for actually approaching a whale that's entangled, a small inflatable thing. And so we get as many people as we can with their boats. The most recent thing that we did, we were trying to find one that was reported up kind of near where Stevens Passage meets Frederick Sound. We were out there with 3 different boats for, 8 hours, just trying to find it. It was trailing a buoy, so you're just looking for a buoy. Mm-hmm. And the Coast Guard will put out a notice to mariners, and they'll say, if you see a whale dragging a buoy, come. Mm-hmm. But if we find it, then everything is focused out of Hawaii. There's the amazing guy, I'm spacing out on his name for the moment, but he's the leader of the whole disentanglement network. And they have to tell us before we can do anything besides even go try to find it. They have complicated permits and whatever's to protect the marine mammals. So he will tell them what's going on, and he'll say, here's what you can do. Here's what we think we should do. Is the whale at risk of dying, or do we think that it might, lose this entanglement on its own? Should we just watch it for a while? How's the weather for us being out there? Should we even try to approach it? Another thing we can do if we don't try to actually disentangle, usually we're encountering free swimming, although we have encountered one that was tangled up in a pot, so it was anchored.
Oh, gotcha.
But if they're free swimming, there's this challenge of trying to re-sight them. It can be really hard.
Trying to what?
Re-sight them. Find them again. Once somebody's cruising by in their yacht and they call it in, it was, this is where it was when we called it in.
it's not staying there while it waits for you to get to them.
Yeah. Right. But we can, if we can't, for whatever reason, approach it, it's swimming too fast, it's way too far away, or the weather's getting bad, we can attach, just get the trailing line that's hanging out, that's why we know that it's entangled, and just attach a telemetry buoy to it. And then the buoy has a signal that our friend down in Hawaii can track.
Gotcha.
And then it's like, okay, now the weather's better. Oh, look, it's come up closer to Juneau. Let's have the Juneau group go and see what they can do. So
if people are interested in volunteering for that portion of the Marine Mammal Center, do you have to be, I'm assuming there's some training involved before you can go out and do disentanglements?
Yes. Toby Bakus, who's also bringing his amazing skills from wildland firefighting, he leads those crews. He's our director, leader of the disentanglement part. So he can get folks, you can talk to him, and there's training, and we do some training that they provide, that the National Marine Fisheries Service provides, and then we do our own yearly drilling and stuff like that to try to keep in practice.
Yeah, okay. And if people are interested generally in being involved in the Petersburg Marine Mammal Center, what are other things that you need in terms of volunteers?
We always need help with things like the science series and helping. If you are somebody who wants to share your information, or knows somebody that's coming to town, or that kind of stuff, let us know for sure, because we'd love to put them as part of the science series. Let's see. And so just the little logistics of this, putting up flyers and getting the room set up beforehand, mm-hmm. and that kind of stuff. We can use volunteers. And then our board, I think we're good on our board right now, but keep your eye out, you know, because we've got a regular board like most nonprofits do, that we do all the stuff.
Okay. And then, Rachel, I know that you had said you had a million questions for, not to put you on the spot. but you said you had a bunch of questions for Sunny.
Well, I had questions about some animal. I mean, first of all, when I was researching, I heard you talking about bubble netting, which is really exciting. I don't know if everyone here already knows what that is, but that is like the coolest thing that I've ever heard of, basically.
And it doesn't happen other places. Like, this is one of the few places that they see it going on, this cooperative feeding behavior. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that it was exclusive to this area.
Yeah, they, you know, they're going after herring when they do that. Mm-hmm. So and when they're on the breeding grounds down in Hawaii or Mexico, they're not feeding.
We're talking about humpback whales.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, so it's they're feeding as much as they can when they're up here, because they're mm-hmm. gonna do that long trip to Hawaii or Mexico mm-hmm. or wherever and mate, and then come back up, and all that feeding is happening here.
Right.
So that's why this is such a crucial place.
I don't know if I understood it right, but they make like a net basically with bubbles, and then they right.
Yeah, one they'll have they're finding that they have. I mean, understanding what's going on under the ocean is so hard because we can't really see it, you know,
right.
But they're getting there. And I think they're finding that they'll have specialized skills. So like you're the bubble net blower. And and you might go with different groups. You know, like they're thinking that it's a little bit opportunistic kind of. And so, okay, we need a bubble net blower. And then the rest of us, some of us will be, you know, just coming up and doing the feeding. And there's it's so cool if you go out with a hydrophone and they'll start singing.
Is the hydrophone a thing that lets you hear underwater?
Yep, microphone underwater. And like the whale guides, Scott Roberge would, for example, would say, oh, yeah, that's the song. Okay. He could listen and hear.
Recognize the bubble net song?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, oh, okay, they're going to start bubble net feeding. I'm hearing, I don't know if it's the song or it's just that they're starting to sing.
Right.
Yeah. So, okay, now let's look around because they're probably going to be bubble netting. And then one that's going to, so one of it swims in, I think as far as we can tell, swims in a circle blowing bubbles. And as those bubbles come up, it's trapping this ball of herring, who are freaking out because the bubbles are scaring them. And so they're consolidating into a big, easy ball. And then all the whales that are part of this come up from underneath with their giant mouths, you know, open and gulp up all the herring that they've consolidated into this.
That's the thing that I didn't really understand, is that the bubbles, I was like, how do the bubbles form a net? I don't understand that part. But it makes sense that herring would be
terrified, freaked
out by all these bubbles in the water.
They also have the white, they have the white flippers, and that can scare the herring too. And so they'll use that if there's just an individual whale, they'll use that white side to kind of freak out the herring and get them to, you know, they school up naturally because they're schooling fish.
Yeah.
So freak them out, get them to school into a big ball, and then everybody come and eat them.
Easy to eat.
Yeah. Yeah. Like energy in versus energy out, right? They're getting a lot in one mouthful.
Yeah. Very efficient.
It's amazing. Yeah. I remember, I was doing some work with Scott. This was a lot of years ago, and I was supposed to be paying attention to when whales might encounter fishing boats. Mm-hmm. And he's like, they're going to start bubble netting over there. And I said, well, that's not really, you know, part of this research. But I was like, but I think I'll be a better marine advisory agent if I go witness bubble net feeding. He said, you'll be a better person if you go witness bubble net feeding. It's true. It's, you know, it's that awe thing. I was telling Hannah, there's a story on the New York Times this morning about how awe is good for us and releases the same hormones as like being in love. Mm-hmm. So if we can be awestruck by the world around us, it's actually good for our health, mm-hmm. in addition to making life more exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. And understanding what is happening is a really good way to, I feel like, open us up for more awe, because, you know, there are things that are beautiful and interesting, but then understanding exactly what's going on. Like, I've seen bubble netting before and I didn't know what was going on. And now hearing you talk about it, it is so much more complex and interesting than I had any idea. So Yeah.
Yeah. Even little plants, which have not been my thing. But then it's like, oh, look at that plant. Is that why I've recently gotten fascinated about how the plants live in the muskeg, because it's not a very hospitable environment, you know, and the way that they're adapted to live there, they've got these leathery leaves. They don't have big broad leaves. And so then you're looking at all the different, you know, permutations of narrow leathery leaves and, you know, in the different versions. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
And if, you know, I grew up walking through the muskeg every single day and it was just a weird, squishy, kind of beautiful place. But knowing that is so much more interesting. And yeah, makes me want to go find out more.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Maybe there'll be a science talk about it sometime.
Oh my gosh. Well, there's another one we could get Karen Dillman.
Can you tell us how to find information about these science talks?
Oh, yeah. Well, they are a collaboration between, you know, Alaska Sea Grant, who I work for, the Marine Mammal Center, and the public library.
Okay.
So the public library does a great job of putting the word out. And then I always put a public service announcement here on the radio. And then we put it on the Petersburg Marine Mammal Center Facebook page. And I put it on my Petersburg Marine Advisory Program Facebook page, too, and put flyers around town.
And you don't have to register in advance. It's just a drop in.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what's the date and time of the next one?
Ooh, the 20th. It is a Thursday. I don't know why I didn't write that down.
I think is it the 26th?
Yeah, Thursday the 26th, 6:30 at the library.
Okay, and we will have a PSA on the radio.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, thank you for all that you do, and thanks for coming in on very short notice to talk with us.
Glad I could help.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
And thanks for being here, Rachel.
Yep.
The Common Good on KFSK is brought to you by the Petersburg Community Foundation, an affiliate of the Alaska Community Foundation. The Petersburg Community Foundation is devoted to improving the lives of the young, the elderly, and vulnerable populations, as well as creating recreation, education, and safety programs. The Petersburg Community Foundation, making grants to local nonprofits through a permanent endowment. More information at petersburgcf.org.